The views and opinions expressed on Lifeguards Off Duty are those of its hosts and guests exclusively. They do not represent any entity, organization, or municipality.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Michael Katchmar.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Lifeguards Off Duty with Dr. Michael Katchmar, the Jersey Shore number one lifeguard-themed video podcast.
Watch us on YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and Facebook Live. Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever streaming service you prefer.
If you would like to contact us, send an email to drkatchmar@icloud.com. Follow us on Instagram at lg.association.
All right, let's get started.
Let's start the show.
Let's do it.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Michael Katchmar. Welcome to Lifeguards Off Duty. Today's date is January the 18th, the year of our Lord, 2022.
Yes, sir.
And thank you for tuning in. We're live today on, on YouTube and Facebook, but today is our first day on Rumble.
Hopefully it's working. We tried troubleshooting it earlier.
Yeah, well, we're on Twitch and Twitter. And if you want to contact us, we do have an email, which is drkatchmar@icloud.com.
And
That up there. Tyler,
I'm Sean today.
Yeah, Tyler's working the computer. You guys, we're a live chat, so you could send us a chat. Also, make sure to subscribe and hit the like button, so when we do go live, you could hear us.
Check out the Instagram, lg.association.
Yeah.
So that's where we post the fun stuff and not these boring conversations.
Yes.
So we have to listen to Katchmar speak.
Yeah. So Tyler, this is Tyler. We have a guest today, and
we have a guest and a guest host.
We have a guest host. So let's say hello to our guest host.
Hi.
Introduce yourself, guest host.
Name's Adam. Adam. I was a host.
Yeah, so he's a guest host.
I was a host a few episodes.
Hostess with the most.
You were a guest a few episodes ago. You've been upgraded. You've been promoted.
I know. I'm working my way up the ladder.
And you're also our de facto marketing director.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And is that an official title? Can I get that in writing?
Oh, you're gonna put us on the spot live like that?
Yeah, I've been waiting weeks. You're not gonna get paid.
You're not gonna get paid.
I wasn't asking for that. I want the title.
You're not gonna get paid.
I told you we have to have a board meeting.
So we have our guest today. I've known him for many, many years, and he's the captain right now of the Island Beach State Park, and he's been there for quite a few years. He's going to tell us, you know, how long he's been there. My hair is all messed up. And so, without further ado, welcome, Chip. Chip, just if you could give us a little bit of a history, you know, like we were talking about a little bit before, where you started, what got you into lifeguarding. You know, it's like where you started, where you got, and then how you drifted down to
Island Beach.
Yeah, and how you became the captain. So how did it all start?
I guess it started in 77, I think it was. I had tried out for Lavalette. Interestingly enough, I mentioned prior to us coming on the air, I actually tried out at Seaside
Heights.
That was a Friday night test.
How cold was the water when you took it? It was probably June, right?
No, it was May.
Ooh! Oh man!
It was.
Did you like put all Vaseline all over you?
No.
That's what I did when I took the test. But go ahead.
Barebacked it, and so I got that position. That was a Friday night. I had gone home, and my mother talked me into trying out at Lavalette the next day. And I got that offered that position. And my mother's actually the one that kind of pushed me to Lavalette because she wanted me to have an extra day off to help her.
Yeah, just to let these young kids know, so there was no days off.
Yeah,
in Seaside
back in the
Heights.
Day, there were no days off, right? So that was the thing. And then in Lavalette, you had one day off, but some weeks you didn't get that, depending upon how busy we were.
You were supposed
to have one day.
Where'd you grow up? Were you always a waterman?
Actually, I grew up in Brick. It depends on who you ask whether or not I'm a true waterman. I wasn't a swimmer, a competitive swimmer, but I'd grown up on the beach and swimming and so on. So we would always take our bikes, ride up to the beach, go surfing and that kind of thing. So yeah. I grew up on the beach. So it was kind of a natural progression.
But what made you go into lifeguarding?
I just love the water. Anything in the water, I'm skiing, water, you know, any water sport.
How old were you at that point?
Like, I think I was 17, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's why, yes, you know, you, like I said, we talk about our moms. Yeah. My dad, I remember my dad, you know, like, hey, at least he got a job. So
yeah, you kind of, you know, your mother kind of.
Yeah, at 17.
If you wanted to keep your car, you kind of had to do what you need to do.
How many years did you work in Lavalette before moving to Island Beach?
I was in Lavalette until I think it was 88.
Okay.
So I'd worked there, 10 or 11 years. Then there were some administrative changes. I left there. There were about five of us that left at the time. We were, I guess, two of us were lieutenants, myself and Joe. We left and went to Island Beach. We had known Jimmy Hanshew, who was the captain at the time.
At the time, yeah.
Yeah, he had, you know, from competition and competing against each other and so on. So Joe gave him a call and said he had a couple of guys that were interested in coming down. And the rest is kind of history, I guess.
So you worked there, and what year did you become captain?
I think the first year I worked there, I sat the wood, which is something I always try to instill in the younger guys. Like, you can't have an ego in lifeguarding, you know? So I went from being a lieutenant by choice and going to Island Beach to sit the wood.
Right.
So I sat there, I think it was a year or two. I became a sergeant.
So you had to work your way up. Yeah, so you got, you know, you weren't a lieutenant anymore. So, yeah. So,
right.
Okay.
So,
I got you.
You know, so I went from that to sergeant to lieutenant. I was the South Beach lieutenant. Joe was there at the time for a while. And then I think it was 2005, Jimmy, retired from lifeguarding, full time.
2005. Okay. Right. Yeah.
He was became a school administrator. So, summers were kind of, you know.
So you took over then, 2005.
Took over for that. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
So
how was the transition from like going from one beach patrol, especially being like a lieutenant where you have that like responsibility and like seniority?
Yeah.
Like going to like a new one where they have a completely different like procedure, essentially.
I think it was a little bit of an adjustment in terms of the actual procedures. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the things are similar. I think it was more about just saying, you know, listen, I understand the role. When I was a lieutenant, I expected people to fall in line and do what they needed to do. So for me personally, it was a pretty easy transition that way. And Jimmy was a good captain, and I think we were all pretty loyal to him. So
I want to throw one thing out. So I drifted over there with everybody. Yeah. I was still working in Seaside Heights, but I was working and training and did some competition with Lavalette. So, of course, when I went to State Park, you know, Jimmy Hanshew was very accommodative. And one thing I remember about that place. Now, you got to remember, this is back in State Park.
Okay.
Right. They had air conditioned locker rooms.
Whoa. Right?
I mean, yes, you know, it was, what? You know, especially in August when it's hot, like Seaside Heights didn't have that.
Why we let our AC working?
I mean, the locker rooms, and actually we took showers. They were air conditioned, you know, and I'm telling you, when those, some of those hot days, I remember that was, I was like, this place is great. It's like, right,
well, I'll tell you what, you felt like you were going, because at Lavalette, you had outside shower, like, you know, at a house and one bathroom for everyone, you know, one stall. It was
one stall.
A door with a commode. You know, the facilities you can't beat. I mean, in a locker room, every guy has his own locker, showers.
It's beautiful.
You know, racks.
And I think the locker rooms were, male and female.
Yeah.
So think about that.
You know, it took me 3 years to earn a locker in Seaside. And even then I got, you know, banned. I got made fun of, like, oh, Brzonski, you're 3 year. Like, wait, you're taking a locker. I'm like, there's four available. And everyone above me has a locker. And they're like, oh, I don't know.
It really is a big deal when you get to take that piece of athletic tape, put it on your locker and write your name.
And I remember he snaked one because him and I shared a locker. And there's like three or four other open lockers, and they made a share, and I was a 3. He was a 2 year.
I have two lockers now. I have one on the north end and one on the south end.
You've
grown so much.
We expanded with the growth of the females in lifeguarding. We actually had to expand our locker room because for years the females would share. There was only, I think, 6 lockers, and some of them shared it. They had one shower stall. So over the years we expanded their locker room, and they're about a third of our beach patrol.
My girlfriend and I actually grabbed dinner with one of your female guards last last night, Victoria Alvarez.
Yeah.
She's a
good guard.
Me and my girlfriend grabbed dinner with Vicky a couple days ago to celebrate her birthday. So yeah. Vicky's a really good friend of us.
She was a tough competitor too.
Did she compete with you guys in your tournament? Okay. Yeah. What were her events? Do you remember?
Paddle. I think she did a few rows here and there, but she was a paddler. She was pretty tough.
Yeah. Are the competitions co-ed? Are all the competitions co-ed or?
Many are. They've moved towards that. When I first started on the beach, they didn't even let the women up when I first started at Lavalette on the ocean. I think my second or third year, there were two females that were able to work the ocean, but they had them all in the bay. And over time, it just women transitioned.
Yeah.
So with the competition piece, it started as, I think, just basically males. And then every so often you might have a female who is a very good swimmer, a competitive swimmer, could break into the lineup. But over the years, women are doing swim, paddle, row, run.
Is that built into the structure of the tournament? Like you have to have X amount of girls on your team for a certain tournament?
On our tournament, it's we moved to that format where you had to have X number of females. Many of the beaches are moving towards that direction, but there are still some that are just, let's say, gender neutral, if you will.
We had two Lavalette guards on a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about some sort of controversy with the Red Bull tournament. Catch? Is that what they were talking about?
Yeah, I don't remember which one, but they said that I think it was Red Bull, and they had it set up where you had to have at least one female on the team, and then they kind of fought it, But I don't know where really what it rolled out. But I could tell you one thing from everybody's perspective. There's some beach patrols, half the beach patrol were women, and it's good. Mm-hmm. They're very competitive. So, I mean, Lavalette got to be pretty close to half the beach.
There's a lot of swimmers than me.
What's that?
A lot of them are probably better swimmers than me.
Oh, they're tough. A lot of them Division I schools.
That's not really saying much. The women, I think, are more attentive to the details, especially like the focusing on the water piece and so on. Not that the guys aren't, but I just think it's the nature of their psychology. They tend to be a little bit more focused than the males. And they're tough, they hold their own.
So on that theme, I wanted to ask you, because I was swimming this morning with, one of the guys who works out, his name is Dave, and he's a former lifeguard at Federal Park at Sandy Hook. So we're going to try to get him on here. I want to get his perspective on, the federal parks and what's different. So I want to ask you, you work for a state, you work for the state park. So what's different the rules and regulations and how you do things mandated from the state as opposed to, say, how Lavalette was or Seaside? I know things are changing, but what's the uniqueness about State Park as far as just coming down from the state, the rules and regs? Are they different than USLA? Do they follow USLA?
No, we follow USLA, and then we have obviously some of the other things that we need to do. State is very big on paperwork.
Give us some ideas,
documentation, like things like that. We have actually a dispatch room, a radio communications office, and everything goes through that. Whereas I think a lot of the other beaches have to call separately.
Now, when you say dispatch, Chip, so you got like somebody who's hired by the state who runs the radio and does the communications.
All communications come through that office. They record everything in terms of, entries into the logs and things like that.
Oh,
rescues,
really?
Emergency calls and things like that. All are funneled through our dispatch office.
Does that go into a electronic record or is it paper?
We transitioned a few years back to electronics, so it's all computerized. They record everything on certain forms that we have.
You don't use that Watchman? Is it Watchman or Watchtower?
Watchtower. We're actually looking at that. For us, it has some pros and cons. We record everything already, but the piece that I like about it is the public information piece. That you can put out, like certain areas have rip currents or certain areas are closed. That kind of thing is very appealing. Getting information out to the public.
Yeah. So what would be, like you could say, pick out of the sky and say, okay, this is out of different than USLA, what the state requires, or is it, you know, more, you know, higher level or different in the paperwork?
Well, we follow USLA standards. All of our training protocols are through the USLA and the certification process for USLA. I think our structure, the way we operate, differs from some of the other beaches. In terms of that, you try out for the beach. We run our test at the beginning of the year, at the end of the last weekend in April and the first weekend in May.
Okay. Then, so it's early. So you start early.
So it's USLA. It's a 510 in the run. And we also do an interview to make sure that, you know, we get a sense of whether or not they're going to fit with our program. And we try to explain to them exactly what our program is in terms of their training. So once we hire them, they'll start training from that point all the way through to July 4th weekend. They won't sit a stand. They train.
Oh, really?
Entire time.
Now, is that a state or is that just, you know, you guys come up with that?
A little of both. USLA has a requirement in terms of the number of hours. Right. But because of the unique environment we're in, you know, the park itself is 10 miles long. It's a peninsula. So we're surrounded on three sides by water. We have the ocean, the Barnegat Bay, and the inlet. Yeah. So we're responding to all areas of the park in a variety of terrain, if you will, because it's not all just, you know, what you see on the beach. You have thicket, you have brush.
So let me get this straight. So the rookies, the new people, they don't sit to stand until after July 4th or at July 4th. So they train. So every day they're coming in and they're just training all day long and learning.
Day long. Wow. We have a regimented training program that we go through, obviously with the basics and things like that. Right out of the blocks, they'll do a three and a half mile run every day until they build up, and then we increase it to between 5 and 8. They will run every aspect of the park at some point in their training. So they'll run one day they do what we call the gate run.
I remember those runs.
Run in from the gate.
I just want to say, it's hot,
end of the road, and they run back. We call it the run home.
You see a fox every once in a while.
There's a
far is that?
It's like it depends on, you know, the day and where we decide to drop them off.
Okay,
but the run back from the run from the road is about 6. The park is another mile and a half once the road ends to the inlet.
I remember when we were there, we used to go there. We'd have the morning brief and we'd run all the way to Tysha Shoal, I don't know how far from the headquarters. Back, and then you went all the way back, and you're running hard, your sneakers on and everything, running fast, and of course you're trying to, you know, compete against each other, and then bang, right onto the water,
right,
and
right up to the water. The water training, we start with the road runs to get them going and get the feel of it, but then we transition to soft sand runs on the beach and rescue road. A lot of people don't know there's a road that runs from like 15 down along the backside of the park, along the bay, pops out on an area that used to be called Party Island, which is at the jetty. And then you run across the jetty. We do a jetty jump with them. We practice jumping off the jetty, make rescues.
Wow. Yeah.
And then they'll run from there, the jetty, back to the road.
Do you, so when I was there, I remember you had this thing, I think it was called the Deathmobile. I mean, maybe, so it was this pickup, it was this truck, it looked like a garbage truck.
It was a rack truck.
And Joe, I remember we're sitting there and I don't know what happened. He's like, we gotta go. And we run down, we run to this, out of the tower, back to the parking lot.
Right.
We get in this truck, we go driving down, and you know, when I never knew how big those dunes are. Like, you think it's just like, you know, you're the road and we stopped and we got out. We had to carry the box and everything. We ran. And I'm telling you that over the dune, it was probably a half a mile. I mean, I'm exaggerating.
One of the, like,
for all beach ratios.
Yeah, one of the off-track. Those are like have brush.
Well, it's also that's got to be tough to get through.
Island Beach is one of the most beautiful places in the world.
I love walking through
one of those fishing trails and you feel like you're on a tropical island.
Yeah.
I drive through that gate. It's, to me, it's heaven.
Yeah. So do you guys,
Seaside Heights, Disney World.
Yeah. do you guys still have that trip though? Or beaches. I want to hear about it because that's an unbelievable thing.
So as part of their training, for example, we have Wolf Beach day where basically we do that. So off beach is we guard, we actually sit on about a mile. So the stands cover about a mile of the beach. So we respond to emergencies everywhere else in the park. So we have an off beach team that's designated each day. They'll come out of the South Beach. So we get an emergency call somewhere in the park. So certain guards will leave their stand and an officer, an EMT, run to the truck, jump in the truck, and wherever the emergency is the park, they respond. So one of the ones you're talking about are those fishing trails. They start at right at the south parking lot is A2. They're lettered and numbered. And they go all the way down to the end of the road, which would be A23. So, and some of them are some serious hoofing. We call it hoofing. So basically what would happen is if we can't, you can only get the truck on in two places on the south end. And that would be at A7. So you can go on at A7 or you have to go all the way down to the road and then maybe come back or go further to the inlet. So depending upon the water conditions, sometimes the high tide washes out to the dune lines and things like that, the guys have to hoof. So what'll happen is they'll pull up on the road. Guys jump out, they'll have whatever they need, medical, the jump bag. We have a jump bag, line box, torps, fins, backboard, collars, the whole bit. And then they have to hoof the trails.
And it's hot back there.
And then make a rescue.
Now, so, do you at the same time, do you guys launch a jet ski at all?
It depends on the scenario and what it is. The jet ski will go. That'll a team from North Beach, two or three guys will man the jet ski and they'll go. Depending on the scenario, but it gets crazy down there. It gets
There's just so much more to account for when you're watching. Yeah. What is it? 10 miles of beach.
Yeah.
Now, are you guys only directly responsible for the swimming beaches?
Right. We're responsible for the bathing area, the swimming area. That's our priority. That's the house. So that's our main focus. But we respond to other areas. Mm-hmm. Someone's in distress. We have the ability to respond. And you have to remember the nearest help for us, the nearest support, like an ambulance, is 5.5 miles away.
Yeah, that could take
Triborough. Yeah,
that could take a half hour on a busy day.
Some traffic.
A few years back, we had a gentleman who broke his neck and the island was bad. And the ambulance calls, you know, were going crazy. We had a gentleman with a broken neck for, he was with us for, it was well over an hour, 45 minutes, I think. Wow.
Before they get him out. Yeah, that was one of those, you had probably one of those Tysha Shoal parties there, right? Mm-hmm. And it was probably a crazy weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to talk about those.
Inlet, you know, so you got the bay, the inlet and the ocean. So do you have any mutual aid help? Like, so in other words, if somebody's in the inlet or something, I think you told me you had rescues here, but you guys don't have a boat. You have a jet ski.
We have the jet ski.
Do you ever take the jet ski, like say there's something down and you put the jet ski on a sled, I mean, not a sled, a trailer and take it down. Like do you get Coast Guard?
Back in 80, I think it was 89. We were one of the first beach patrols to actually start utilizing, at least that I know of on the East Coast. It was jet skis.
Yeah, I remember when Hanshu came up, he got it with the sled. He was so happy. He drove it all up to the seaside to show me.
We went up and we trained a few beaches. That I was with him that day.
Yeah.
We drove up to train a few.
Do you remember when you guys? Do you remember I was swimming with that kid who was drowning? Said, do you remember that?
He said, "If you drown, I'm going to kill you."
This is great. Great. This just got to hear the story. This is because he's amazing. So they come up, right? We had this rookie. He was such a piss poor swimmer. And we're working out. I'm making him swim out, you know.
Pretty far out.
And I had the rope. I had the can. I had the can. And you know, I'd let him swim, but I had the can. And we're swimming out, right? And so, because I figured, you know, God forbid. And we got out there, and we were going to go back in. He was struggling, and these guys pull up, and like, oh yeah, you know. So we're talking. I take the thing for a ride. You know, it's like really great because we didn't have a sled at that time. Uh-huh. They were the first ones to get a sled. And so what happened was I'm talking to the kid and I was like, go back in. Right. And he goes, like, can I have the can? I go, no. And I go, and he goes, I don't know if I'm going to make it. I go, if you don't make it, you're going to be fired.
It's literally your job. It's your job to make it. It's your job.
And you know I say that. You know they work they work with me.
That's all true.
So go ahead.
Just to give the rookie a little credit, you know, we were pretty far out.
A couple of buoy lines.
Yeah, I think he was. I think he made it.
Giving him a ride back in with the slide.
No.
When you guys first started introducing these jet skis into lifeguarding, I'm assuming there was no protocol for how to use it.
Right.
So what was that process like?
I think that's, again, one of the things that's unique to us in terms of that. I don't know. Do you guys have a manual, I would assume, some kind of training manual or whatever?
Oh, yeah, of course.
No, we do. Yeah, we follow
it. It's all in here.
All right. Well, ours is, 119 pages long.
So. For the jet ski. I was gonna say that's a lot. I was like, holy shit.
I would expect that length like a Van Dyne.
Was that like a trial and error kind of process figuring out how to make a rescue with that?
We did a couple of things at the time. We trial and error, we came up with what we were thinking worked. And then we sent one of our guards, one of our sergeants out to a training with, I think it was called P21 or something. The woman who ran the training program trained big wave surf jet skis.
That
drivers.
That shit is next level.
She trained him. She went through our protocols, what we thought worked. And we were, I want to say we were on the right train. We probably got off a station or two early. So she gave us some things to think about, some things to tweak, and that's kind of where it evolved.
They're great. They're great. Yeah. I mean, we've used them for rescues, you know, very effectively.
Yeah. In heavy surf, you can't beat it.
No.
So let's check this out. Hold on. So we got,
towing surfing.
These are surfers getting towed into waves.
Is this a Nazarene?
This is Nazar. Yeah, this is Nazar. How do we say that? Is it Nazare or Nazar? Does anybody actually know?
I think it's pronounced Nazare, but
What's crazy?
Don't take my word.
These waves aren't even that big.
Yeah, those are
what you'll see with this stuff, and just the timing of it. Like this wave's about to break on this guy's head, and he's sitting on the inside. Oh my god.
there's one.
Oh my god.
Get out of here.
There's one where I forget which one.
And you just get swallowed.
There's
by
five or six jet skis. They're all inside, and you see this monster coming on the horizon, and it's a drone shot, and all of a sudden you see all of the jet skis taking off to head out. Yeah. And they go over, and one doesn't make it.
He
comes back.
He made it
out of there.
I've
seen some wipeouts with these where the jet ski goes over the falls.
They say that being like the jet ski, like rescuer, like with these surfers is more dangerous than being the surfer by far.
We know how much those things.
The jet skis are great in heavy surf and for multiples.
We haven't had a jet ski rescue for a while.
I love the jet ski.
Yeah, but
the jet ski is my favorite thing to do.
But we've used them over the years. Yeah. You know, I mean, Doug Parise, who was. I remember he used it very successfully, and we used it without the sled, very successful. But now it's a little bit different. We do have it, and we do off beaches with it. But let me get.
How would you do a rescue without a sled on a jet ski?
You just pick the person up and throw them.
If they're conscious.
If they're conscious, You know.
So what if they're unconscious?
Yeah, if they're unconscious, the sled comes
Right. That's what we have a sled now.
Multiple.
Well, we have two jet skis and two sleds. You know. So, but let me. I want to forget before I forget this. So, how do you guys handle? An inlet, somebody falls off, a fisherman gets swamped, whatever, falls off the jetty. Like, how do you guys respond to that? I mean, you don't have a boat. There's traffic going in and out. Call Coast Guard or like
the
what?
The truck goes, Coast Guard will dispatch. So we've had some mutual aids with the Coast
Guard. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
It depends on the scenario, but the truck is definitely going. It'll have four guys on it. And that's part of the training and why we spend so much, we were talking about the training. it is so unique of what could happen and what they're going to face. So every guard has to be able to handle those situations. So when they get on the truck, and that's the probably the hardest thing about it. Obviously, you get your little adrenaline shot because you're excited.
Yeah.
You don't know. When you're sitting on the stand, you see things develop. You see things how, you know, it unfolds.
Yeah, when it's an offbeat, you don't have the time to do the calculations.
Right.
You're not
so in your head, you're running what the possible scenario is. The radio, we're getting information over radio and talking about what we may face and how to handle it. But in those scenarios, the jet ski would follow, but the truck.
Communication.
The truck with the communication and so on. The truck will usually beat the jet ski, believe it or not. The jet ski does about 55, 60. But
we were testing it. I remember back in the day because we just got there. It was like, see who could beat who.
Yeah, but Southeast Chop, which is our predominant, and you're hitting that pretty hard. So the guys on the jet skis get banged up.
I want to just one second with this thing because I want to because this is really I want to give him an accolade real quick, not real quick, but you guys have VHF radios, and I know that so. I want to give you this. I remember how professional, because VHF radio is important if you're going to be dealing with the boat traffic. And there was I don't know if you remember, it was a tragedy. A guy came down with his autistic child, and he drowned.
Yeah.
So I happened to be, it was off beach, not, the protected area. I noticed because I was out there with my father, we were fishing, and I have VHF radio. So VHF radio is what you have in all the boats. And so I hear this going on. I don't know who was on the radio that day, but it was so damn professional. So they were interfacing with the Coast Guard. And basically at this time, it was a recovery. You guys found the body about 2 hours, I remember. Yeah. And but I was so impressed. The verbiage, the calmness, the professionalism was really good.
Yeah.
I sat there and go, man, these guys were right up there with the Coast Guard. Because the Coast Guard's, very professional. And they're highly trained. And you guys, you remember that?
We remember that. It was 8-4 is where that went down.
Yeah.
Now, because you have to know going into every summer that that's a distinct possibility that someone drowns off beach. Is that part of how you prepare your guards? This might happen?
We talk about it. One of the things in the training process, we spend some time talking about the inevitability of what we do. We may be dealing with a situation where someone passes or we're doing, we spend a lot of time, on our, recovery, submerged victim drills and so on. But some of them, when you've been around a while, you kind of, just maturity, I guess. Mm-hmm. But for some of the youngsters, so we also have, what we call critical incident debriefing. So that might be one of the things that the state we put together a few years ago. Now it's more than that, but 15 years ago, I think maybe even 20. Where we will have someone come in and speak with, like a counselor, come in and speak with, some of the guards who.
And now that's similar to like a case where if a police officer has to discharge his weapon, right?
Right.
To follow that question up. Holy shit! I forgot what I was gonna ask.
Yeah, well, you're out. That's it. You lost your turn. So now I get. So I got. So now, oh, I'm right. I had on my hand. Hey, it's me. So Chip. With the we've been talking about that. Obviously, for people out there who are listening, we're not just putting suntan lotion and looking, at the waves. This is a serious job. What with
I
regard?
I remembered my question.
Okay, well, hold it because you lost your space.
You're gonna make me forget it again.
No. Write it down. I gotta get you a pad. But with the we've been talking about. The young kids, and this kind of dovetails into that. So, you don't have anybody until July, the young kids, theoretically, and rookie is going to be young, but do you manage or do anything different with the 16, 17 year old kids as far as, what kind of exposure or, you try to,
I think it's exposure to what? The training?
I'll go back. Do you guys have a junior lifeguard program?
We don't necessarily have a junior. Actually, we'd like to develop that. But one of the things that kind of hampers some of the things that we do is, again, it's not like we're a town where, you have stores and shops and
that's a good point. Yeah.
You come in the park for the day or half a day or whatever it is.
That's a good point.
We have, you know, obviously we have our regulars, but we also have a, you know, a large, for lack of a better expression, transient population, vacationers that right. come in. They're staying for the weekend. They're staying for a few days. We have a huge international crowd, which presents some issues, communication yeah. issues. So to answer your question with training the younger ones, and even some of the, you know, 2-3s, we spend a lot of time talking about that, you know, dealing with different issues and things like that. So, they all go through the same training. But with the younger ones, we talk about, some of the serious aspects of the job and, just kind of consistently talk to them. If they're involved in a critical incident where someone passes or they, submersion, recovery, we also instituted going back years, anyone who's under, actually we do it for even some of the older guys, but we'll call, their families. So we'll call their families, like if it's
that's a good idea. That's
call their family and say, listen, you know,
it was involved in this situation. We do that sometimes.
I think the psychology behind what we do is really understated.
Right. I would agree.
And two things. So you gave me a thought, and when you were talking about the transient nature of your beachgoers, I think a lot of New Jersey beaches can be broken down into like one of two categories. Like one is very touristy, a lot like us, Point Pleasant. I bet
day trippers.
And you have like the really local beaches, and they can kind of the styles of lifeguarding that
so different
emerge from that can really diverge in two other directions. But the question I remembered, so you have it worked into like your thought process when you're training a kid, you know, this might happen, right? This kind of off duty, tragedy or off beach tragedy. Like, how do you say, like, say, you know, things are going down on the bathing beaches, but also you get a call about something happening off beach. Like, what's the protocol for that? Do you have it pre-planned, like how many people you can peel off and go?
Yes, there's a procedure. The house is the most important, so we never strip down the house. But we'll have the initial.
So just so the audience knows, when you say the house, that's I know what you mean,
our guarded area.
Right, where the lifeguard stands are,
right,
where it says this is where the lifeguards are, this is where you swim. So it's a designated swimming area.
Right, and so with the other 9 miles, there are people who choose to go in the water, unfortunately, and get in trouble. So if we have a situation where the initial group goes, and it's usually 4, sometimes 5 guys on the truck, the officer in charge, when they get down there, will make a decision on whether or not they need additional support. And if that occurs, then we have a second wave that will come down from the other half of the beach. So the bathing beach is never left unprotected. It does get a little difficult on some days where the water's kicking pretty bad and we are crowded because our park closes and people think some people think it's the number of people and it's really not. They go by parking spaces.
So it could be as many people kind of numbers, fit into those cars.
What kind of numbers? What kind of numbers you think?
Pack them in. On a weekend, we'll have 10,000 people on the bathing beach.
On the bathing, but what about the whole, park?
Well, you figure, you know, I don't know.
30,000.
I can tell you, if you go down there on 4th of July weekend and it's a good weekend weather-wise, you can walk from A7, which is 1.5 miles, a little over 1.5 miles from the bathing beach, the end of the bathing beach. You can walk from there all the way down to the inlet on the tops of trucks.
Yeah, so it's just lined up because these people.
And you figure those people come and they pack their trucks and they have, you know.
And these are just people pulling onto the beach in their trucks.
Yeah, and they're supposed to be. We sell how you drive on the beach is we sell a mobile sport fishing pass. And there's a certain requirement. You have to have four-wheel drive. There's a list of equipment.
You have like a shovel in the back,
fishing poles and everything.
So you buy that pass, but that pass is really for you to get on the beach to fish. But there are a lot of non-fishing people who
fulfill those requirements, but don't fish.
And the Rangers, the police, that tells you how long I've been there. They used to call them Rangers, the police will ticket them and so on.
So they're not Rangers?
They're
park police, right?
Yeah, state park police. They just same Same privileges that Seaside Heights police have, okay, or any other police.
So Chip, with when you talk about, you know, the house, so I can see how you got to, go down and take care of stuff on the other beaches that are not your house, and then you could limit your resources. What's the state's position on that? So in other words, where the lifeguards are, that's protected lifeguarded beach. The other areas is it like swim at your own risk, or like what is there a sign?
You should know this. There is no such thing as swim at your own risk.
But what's the state of New Jersey say?
There is no such thing as swim at your own risk in the state of New Jersey.
Okay, so
the idea is that these are unguarded areas, and they're all marked, every single path.
What do they say? Unguarded. Signs,
unguarded, no swimming.
Okay.
So that's if. You're asking me what the position is. That's
no. I just want to know. Right.
A surfer that decides to paddle out on one of the unguarded beaches.
We allow surfing in certain areas down there. And the surfers actually, in some cases, have made rescues. If you're a surfer, you know that you've probably pulled people out.
Yeah.
So, but there's also the distinction between it's swimming. So you have issues with the fishermen.
I'm sure conflicting user
groups.
So the people, we don't have a map of it, but when I was there, the two north and south beaches were very close. They were contiguous. Right. They're basically connected. But then you opened up another beach south,
right? A7,
which is Pice, that, how far away is that? So how far away is that from your main?
A little over a mile and a half from our southern bathing beach, the last guarded beach, if you will, on the main beach.
We
opened that area up just because of the number of responses we had to that area. Years ago, they put in a wooden walkway,
right,
and it went from the ocean beach, the water, all the way out to the bay. And that was for handicapped access, so that people who are physically challenged or disabled had an easy access to the beaches areas for fishing. You know, like anything, it grows in popularity and different user groups take over.
It got crazy.
So it began, we were down there constantly making rescues, first aids. I mean, not every call we get is a water-related issue.
Yeah.
So
here I have a map pulled up of Island Beach State Park.
So does it show the south?
So the swimming area that they're showing there is at A7, it's
hard to see. So the one on the left, Island Beach Day Beach, and then you have the southern part,
right?
And that's a mile and a half away,
right? So the one on the left is the main swimming areas with the big parking lots, and then you have the southern swimming area, which is opposite Tice's Shoal, A7, if you will, in terms of path numbers.
Now I know some crazy stuff goes down on Tice's Shoal.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why years ago, we had a call. We call it an off beach, where the guys jump in the truck and go down there. I happened to be on the truck that day. We went. It was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and we were there until almost 9 o'clock at night. And every conceivable thing you can imagine, other than a submersion, we had broken necks, we had cardiac, broken arms, legs, cuts, passed out.
They're all drinking. How many boats would you have in that? So Tice's Shoal is on the bay.
Yeah.
And it's people come with their boats. They didn't come into the island, through the road. They didn't come with cars or trucks. So how many boats would you say when they have
a weekend, a nice weekend, thousands.
Yeah. And I've been there. It's crazy.
It gets crazy. So we needed to have some type of situation where, we couldn't constantly keep,
sending people down. You got your houses. So, you got to guard your house. So,
and so what we did is we wrote a proposal to actually have guards sit down there. And, from my perspective, in terms of the water safety piece, it's helped tremendously.
But the guards on the southern section, they deal with the ocean, not necessarily Tice's Shoal. They're on call to Tice's Shoal.
We're on call. Right. And actually the guards that are up on the ocean really wouldn't be the ones who respond. It would be the rescue truck with the equipment.
Yeah, because you got, again, it's an interesting, that's because that's a, you don't, you know, you can't see them. You know, they're a mile. I didn't realize it was that far away. So that could be a real hassle.
Let's show this video. Yeah. So this is Bay Bash. So this is before what they now call Floatcella.
Yeah.
So let me explain how I see Floatcella, because I have never seen anything this crazy in my life. I went there for the first time about 2 years ago and I heard about it. One of my friends was like, "We're going to Floatcella." I was like, "You're going to what?" They're like, "It's a festival on the water." I'm like, "No way." And what's crazy is it's not organized by anybody. Right. It's just people just show up. But it's kind of like,
don't they have like a pontoon boat that like plays music or something like that?
They have a pontoon boat. They have a yacht with a DJ. They have a guy with a pizza oven on a boat buzzing around.
And the guy with the kayak.
Right.
Paddles around and delivers pizza to people. He went by me with a whole stack, and I was just like, "I'm in the water." I'm like, "I would give this guy."
You got the volume off.
We were in there. We were in here one time, and some lady was pushing around on a paddleboard, and I gave to give her a boost, and she fell off, and she was so mad at me. She's like, "I have a full face of makeup on." Like, what are you doing water sports with a full face of makeup?
Look at that fat guy.
So the situation here is we get called down here and they'll say, that particular day it was like this. And they said someone is passed out in the water.
Can you put him on a bottom?
Where are you at?
Yeah, like how do you even look? There's the DJ.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, there's a cop. Yeah. This is a band playing.
That's what I thought it was. It was like a couple pontoon boats like all tied together to make a stage. So and then there's like a band.
How do you locate a prop? Do they say, he's by the DJ boat?
That's the problem.
Because that's how we find each other out there.
Yeah. There's kites. There's the calls we get. It's like we're on the white boat with the blue bin top.
Well, I heard like what I heard. I heard
wasn't
there talk about because I'm with the Coast Guard Auxiliary, and I remember there was talk a couple years ago about going there and setting up a grid,
So you did that finally.
So as a result of
some of the situations like this a few years back, in coordination with the Ocean County Sheriff Department, the Marine Police, the Parks Park Police, Berkeley, we're actually in Berkeley's. Town line. So we coordinated and we set up a pretty good way to handle this
situation. Yeah. So now you got a grid situation.
Yeah. So there's a gridded situation. There's a clear pathway that's kept all the way out from the dock where we go.
So you have access now.
Yeah.
So like we do on the beach when we put the cones out and everything.
These are some pictures of all the boats you'll see. It gets more crowded than
you
this.
You can't
appreciate
it.
Here's the thing. Even on a regular weekend, it's packed down here.
I mean, it's not just that.
I mean, you know, I'd say there's a good 400 boats on an average day.
So one of the things in terms of getting that swimming area going down there, the southern swimming area, was, I wrote a report and we actually went down there on different days and we took pictures and video and so on. And we made what I thought was a well-written proposal. And, we had some the superintendent was very supportive of it and the regional superintendent. So, the hierarchy and going up the chain. And one of the, I think the unique things, or I don't want to say a disadvantage, but in municipal towns, you know, they're right there. So they can see it. You know, you could
the state
call
the
mayor
trend.
Or whoever, the business
right.
chair,
they
whoever,
see
the police
right.
chief,
they
and
don't
say,
see
come
it.
Down and see it. So geographically, we're on the opposite side of the state. So it took a little while to get it in place. But as it went up the chain, so to speak, everyone was very supportive.
So what I see there, because I've been there a few times, it's not just that, you know, your issues are on the bay side. Mm-hmm. What it is, those people in the boat, they wade in, they got little dinghies, they go over that boardwalk and they go on the beach.
Right.
So now that beach is packed. So are there days where that beach is more packed than like your other beaches or
no,
equal?
I wouldn't say more packed. It's a smaller area. So the bathing beach gets way more, but that place gets
a lot of people from the boats go over there.
And, you know, it's a small area. It's a much smaller area. It's confined. What do we have? Three stands down there and we'll set up, I think most of the time we set up two, you know, because as you move away from the path, there's fewer people. So we try to keep them a little more contained.
Yeah.
So they
don't limit how many people could go there. They just,
no. And it's reasonable. It's a walk at what they call a walk-in fee. You know, it's a couple of dollars per person, or you can buy a season pass. And I don't know what the prices are this year, but your season pass can get like five.
Yeah. That's a great thing. Cause if you live in Bayville or Ocean Gate, you could get in a boat, go across, you know, don't have to worry about the traffic. Yeah. Then go in. And if you have the park's closed, and anchor up there, you could get close enough and walk in.
Regardless of any of that, it's cheaper to go to Island Beach for just the day than pretty much anywhere in the state.
I agree.
Your car or something.
You know, it's easy for me to say because I work there, but I guess people paying sometimes don't agree with the fees. But if you really think about it, you have a decent, you know, my SUV, you put, you know, 10 people in and drive
What's the fee for a car?
It's like what, like 10 bucks at least?
$10 for a car.
And we're charging $10 per person.
Out of state is 20.
All right.
Okay.
And I ran into that problem.
And the other thing is, if you buy a park pass, like a state park pass, you can get in any park in the state. So it's
an annual
pass, and you can get in any park.
How much is that? How much is that?
You're asking me questions.
No, you don't know.
I don't know what the fees are this year.
That's great. I've been down there. I think it's great, but that's a real challenge for you guys because now is that do they have festivals there? Just once a year or once during
the
summer?
They run different things. In the fall, we start Memorial Day weekend. We start guarding, but we'll have guys around setting up right after the swim test, basically. In 93, up until 93, we didn't guard Memorial Day weekend, but there was some bad water. There was an issue where someone drowned. And so, again, they thought it was, you know,
to start. So then how far do you go?
Most of the beaches, most of the towns either followed suit or soon after started guarding.
And how far do you go on the other end into September? When do you guys officially?
The last day of September.
Oh, so you go to the end of September.
Yeah.
Is that every day or your weekends?
Every day.
Oh, really?
Three or four days a week, depending on the weather. Usually it's like Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And we'll have a skeleton crew.
Oh, wow.
On any other days.
So, you know, having said that, I wanted to ask you about this because I know, like, we were talking about it back in the day. We used to, you know, when you took the test, there was probably 20 guys, you know, back in the 70s. Now it's hard to get lifeguards. And, you know, and also the pay and everything. So, like, we're all the beaches now, even though we're not at this point because we're seasonal, have to go with the minimum wage. I think the minimum wage now is $13. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
It's going up.
I started at like 8.
15, 8, 75.
No, but what? Like, no, I'm just saying. But what? So, what do you guys?
You guys are getting paid by the day, right? When you started?
Yeah.
No. I was making. I started. I think you're gonna laugh. It was
about $15-$20 a day.
Two something an hour.
Ten or something like that.
But for now, like, what is the state doing? Like, is because you know everything? Because you know the state. They have these new laws about how much you got to pay.
Right.
So do they come down and like set? You know, state. What's the word I want to use? Like a lot of beaches, we don't have to follow the state mandate right now. It's 13 now, 14 next year, and 15 the following. For like, say, if you own a 7-Eleven or something. So, what are you guys doing? Like, what's the?
I think we're incrementally moving up as well. I think everyone is attracting kids. Part of the problem is obviously the stereotype perception of the public on what we do. I think that's an impact. I think the amount of training that really takes to be a lifeguard anywhere at anybody's beach. and the right mindset and I think people are shying away from that. You know, if they can go make their own hours at some business, which some of them do, say, oh, I'm only going to work 3 hours a day.
Or I'm only going to work 10 hours a week so I can collect unemployment.
Right. What do you guys,
a lot of people were doing that.
You get paid. Well, what do you guys, like for starting pay? I don't even know what's our starting pay? Anybody know?
We started, I think, at 15 this year.
For years we were a little bit behind. So we're coming up to 14, I think. I don't know what this pay scale yet. We're still working on that for this.
Everybody's going through the same thing.
Has that been an issue for you recruiting guards?
I think
I could go to Seaside Park and make more money. Why would I come here?
Well, that was part of the problem mm-hmm. for a number of years. But now I think we're in the competitive market, if you will. Part of it is our location again, geographically. You can run into town, take your break, hop off your stand, run in to get.
You gotta drive farther to get. Right. Into
I think
morning,
I tell you
our work home. Schedule.
I'll go home and grab my laundry on my break.
Right.
Sometime.
Right. So I think
$3 away.
No, I guys, they're not doing that.
I actually think that pay is only, is important, but it's right. one component. Like we've been paying, for lower than that for a while, but they work a long amount of time. What's interesting about your beach, if you say you're paying $13, $14 an hour, but you start at May, Memorial, and you go to the end of September, a lifeguard can make a lot of money.
Right.
My thing is that we're coming up to all of this. We talked about this, and I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but it's not just, they can make more money other places. I think a lot of people are realizing it's, the job is a job. It's
grueling.
It's too bad because we don't get anybody to listen, but it takes a certain,
right.
But here's the thing though, Chip, how many people's, we talk about everybody in this room here, we've legitimately saved at least one person's
right.
life.
Right.
That's a unique thing.
Right.
And I think that's
a draw for some people. And I think the athletic and the environment working on the beach mm-hmm. and so on. But, the other flip side of that, that people don't see is it's pouring rain. We're out there. Everybody thinks it's sunny and no. fun. And
yeah. I've been sitting up on the back of the chair, hugging my umbrella.
And freezing cold. The water's freezing cold. So I think there's, there's that piece of it. I think, as much as lifeguarding has evolved, because I'll tell you, you guys are probably started, and Mike, you would probably agree, in a much more professional mode than when we started. When we first started, the training was not
wasn't as organized,
and
it wasn't as organized.
It wasn't your water. We now are watermen, professionals. Back then your training, you went through training, but it wasn't as organized. It wasn't as modeled.
A lot of beaches were doing kind of different things. And
there was no USLA. When we started.
Standardized it across.
There was no USLA started, I don't know, 80, 81.
Somewhere in there, right?
There was no USLA to follow. There was no flags.
Yeah, right.
You did your own thing.
When we trained, they just wanted you to be tough. That was their thing. You just have to be tough because you have to go out and surf. You have to, pick people up. You have to deal with it. Just the medical piece alone. I mean, I remember when I first started pulling, so we used to have the lines with the kegs. Talk about evolution.
Is that why we call them cans? Because they used to look like cans?
Actually, well,
they
were metal. They were metal.
Wow.
They were made of tin. In 52, they made a tin. That's where it came from. There's a great museum down in, Virginia, North.
We have Dr. Discus in here. We have Billy.
We should get in contact from someone from that museum.
But remember when we had Billy in here?
Awesome.
He talked about there was fiberglass cans. Mm-hmm.
And
metal ones.
Right.
And I think the metal ones he was saying were the rope can and the loose ones were.
Imagine getting smacked. Have you ever been smacked in the back of the head with that? Bringing it in?
Yeah.
Not fun.
But that's, we had the kegs and marked the swimming area. And so you had these ropes that went out into the water with a dead man on the beach and an anchor. And you had actual beer barrels that were, kegs on the lines. And I remember this one woman, she took a header into the can and she split her. Blood all over me, and you didn't think about that stuff back then.
How do you guys? So we, we're talking about the belts, years ago, and the evolution. So, in Seaside, we, and like probably most beaches, we got the, the rope can, a loose can goes out, and a rope follows. Mm-hmm. Atlantic City, they have a loose can in a boat. What's your guys' protocol? Like, how do you make
situational. I love line. I'm a big fan of the line. But if you're going, in a situation to do, a short 20 yard swims, and then the line isn't
right.
In my opinion, practical. It pulls people off the stand, and less eyes on the water. But I'm a proponent of the lines. We use every stand has a minimum of two torps, a line box. Some have a paddle board or a kayak. Some stands have both. Some every couple of stands, there's a boat.
You don't use, I mean, do you guys actively use your boats for like patrolling or going out, you know?
Yeah, we do. We use them just when they're not damaged. So well, it's, you know, it's difficult. That's a maintenance item. And there's,
I was going to say, they're probably expensive to maintain.
They're not as expensive as a jet ski or quads or things like that to maintain. It's just people don't know how. Okay. So for example, like, you know how to fix a boat?
I have no idea how to fix a boat.
How many years have you been on a beach?
This will be my ninth summer.
Right.
Yeah. But I can.
I actually thought about buying one and trying to learn how to fix it myself.
Can you fix a surfboard? You know how to do that?
I could probably come closer to figuring that out than a boat.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So back again, when you started on the beach, they taught you all those things.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You guys, especially with
the, like the philosophy back then, it sounds like it's like you're in charge of your stand and everything that goes on here.
You were, and the senior guard was. And that's the thing. I think it's pretty standard tradition across the board. Your senior guards are, you know, the rookies are assigned to senior guards to help mold them. And
that's a really good point that we, you know, we knew how to take care of our boats. We knew how to fix our stuff because there was nobody else to do it. Right. Let me just stop. Go back with one thing, because this is an important thing that you just said. And I want to make these young guys hear it here and also at our audience. And
our six concurrent listeners.
Six. Well, that's good. Yeah. Hey, listen, we got, you know, with regard to rope can and loose can, you know, we have this dogma. Like some people are like, you got to do this, you got to do this. But you make a good point. And there are times where I have just swam out of rope.
Yeah.
That as the initial thing, based on the situation.
I've done that before too.
And or no rope and just the loose. And never put out at the rope can. And I think that when you start to get pigeonholed and say, you got to send out a loose, you got to send out a rope, you start really, you're wasting.
You lose something. That's an interesting point.
So I want to get expand on, because you have a lot of experience. You know,
one of the first things we train the guards is I tell them right off the bat, I need thinkers.
Yep.
I need people.
Oh, where did we hear that before?
Think their way. It's one of the first things in our first.
Not from you, Catchwell.
Yeah, right.
Our first sit down with them once they're hired and we start the training is I need thinkers. Just because we say this is the way you make a rescue, you know, it could fall apart. You know, you're out there and situation. You think you're going
it's dynamic.
One,
and then it turns into two, three, four, multiple.
Right.
So we, in the training process, we try to give them scenarios and part of the training. I don't want to go too far down the road in case anybody's trying out, but there is the culmination, let's say, of their training is, how do I want to say this? RKT. We call it RKT. It's a rookie knowledge test.
Okay.
So they, before they get to that practical, let's say, a practical aspect of what they've experienced in their training, they also do a written test. So they have to do a written test on everything that we've taught them in our manual and things like that. And then they go out and they do a practical, which is basically problem solving.
You're very... tuned into the psychological game of what lifeguarding is, and as a leader, that's super important. And I wanted to ask you, because did you work for only two other captains, or how many?
No, I worked for three other captains. I first started Lavalette. It was the captain was Dick Hoffman.
Okay.
Then it was Jim Kresbaugh, and then I left and I was down with Jimmy. So I was under three.
What are some of the most important leadership lessons you learned from working under those guys?
That's a good question.
It is. That's a very good question. I think I learned.
See, he comes up with a good. He sent me
a Google Doc with all his questions for you.
You need a pay raise.
I don't get paid.
I think I learned something from all of them. I think one of the things. Flexibility in your thinking, which is one of the things I try to impart to the kids. You have to problem solve. You know, just because you've done it this way every time, things fall apart. I think Focus is another thing. I think training is another one. That was a big thing when we were at Lavalette.
Yeah, Chris was brutal. Yeah. We trained and trained and trained.
He was a good captain.
And just like go back because I want to give him an accolade. I know some people, but you know, I remember because there were tournaments and we would train with the boat in and out of the boat, turning the boat around. I mean, just every day in, you know, and the little things, you know, just getting into the water with the can, right. Everything was dissected down with Chris. Right. And I really liked that. Right.
I think that, and that's, you know, he was great. He was a good captain and, he taught us a lot in terms of that, breaking things down and just drilling. I think, one of the things that I got from Jimmy Hanchu, who's a good friend of mine, is when I first came to Island Beach, I think my eyes, I call it the awakening, you know, because you referenced earlier the different types of town and your locals and things
and
like that.
And Lavalette is one of those Lavalette more local beaches.
You know, a lot of the people are beach people. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe it's changed, the dynamic or demographic has changed, you know, with the people selling houses and so on. But, you know, when I was at Lavalette, the northern end of the town, most of the town was residents. You know, they own their homes. They were beach people. They grew up there. The southern half had some of the motels, so there was a little bit more transient piece. But when I went to Island Beach, I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is a whole we swim. Our swimming areas, it's not like we have designated swimming. And I think Lavalette still does this, and not a knock at all.
Well, they lost their jetty, so it's changed. Everything's changed up because of the
flag system where you swim between the flags and so on. We don't have that. We're in terms of where the water or how the stands are set up and the layout is more like California. People are going pretty much
everywhere. You don't have the space for it, similar to us. You can't block off three blocks, even if those three blocks constitute a rip current and a gully feeding that rip current.
We will designate areas like there's a surfing area, there's boogie board areas and so on that way. And we'll, if we have to shut water down, we have signs that we'll post and the guards stand there and their function is to just keep that rip area clear. But for the most part, it's a continuous swimming area. So,
see, I'm gonna give you another accolade because one thing that we all State Park is huge, and as a supervisor, I can see when you talk about the house, you know, I could see a day where it's crazy, you know, you got Tysha Shoal, you got thousands and thousands of people, you got the trucks all down there, and you only have a certain amount of resources, and like on our beach, it's not just one rescue, it's three rescues. It's an injury. It's five lost kids. It's people passed out in the back of the beach. And, you know, you got to really go. I can only imagine, you know, the stuff that hammers down here. And I give you a lot of credit because, you know, that's a huge, huge area and responsibility.
I mean, the way I'm picturing it is like, it's basically what we do in Seaside Heights plus the bay plus that's all the way down the rest of the
And the inlet. And the inlet.
Pictured Island Beach State Park is one of the only other beaches that is similar to Seaside Heights in that, like, there's no breakout between stands and stuff. That's something I noticed right away.
Yeah. And it's not a knock in any way, shape, or form against, you know,
it's different little bit. You know?
I think being in lifeguarding 43, 44 years, one of the things, it's a camaraderie. We're a brotherhood. And so even though, you know, in competition, we probably, but I think when it comes down to it, I know instances where other beaches have helped out other beaches and supported them on rescues and things like that. So,
and that comes a lot of times in like late September.
And I think, you know, so I think there's a brotherhood here. So there's not a knock against any other beach. It's like, think each beach is unique to its, you know.
So, I think everybody respects your beach patrol because you have to handle a huge crowd, and it could go sour. I know that place goes sour real quick. So let me ask you this. So we always ask everybody in here, I know you didn't prepare for this, but can you give us at least one like crazy, crazy rescue? It doesn't have to be anything, you know, either way, when you're back in the day.
Crazy rescue that you did. Funny lifeguard.
I want to know a really crazy rescue that, well, or big one, or like something that was really, you know.
Personally for me, one of the, obviously some heavy surf rescues and multiples where sandbars have given away and we've had, 50 people just
done. Right.
But we, if the water's bad, we'll keep some guys on for a response in case of an emergency. And so this was 2005, I think it was. I think it was my first year as captain. We kept a few guys on. The ocean was kicking. It was like 6'8". It was just pumping. And we were flying red. Nobody was even allowed to put their toes in the water. So we kept guys on. And our park is open after we go off duty. So we start at some point. Maybe I should walk you through our day. So we kept guys on. We close up at 6 o'clock. And we kept four guys on and myself. Just to kind of, you know, if there was an emergency or whatever. So
it was
starting to get dusk. It was, I guess, late August or mid August. And, you know, starting to get dark and we hear a call over the radio. Trenton Dispatch is trying to reach out to the park police that there is a boat sinking in the inlet on our side of the inlet with six people on it and it's on fire.
Oh, it's not just sinking, it's on fire. Right. So and like, yeah. And they got tubes of Ebola that they stole from the Newark airport and they're going, yeah, so go ahead.
So anyway, so we're saying, well, let's go check it out.
We
go down and, you know, again, it's in the back part of the park. It's in the most remote area of the park. So we go all the way down. We're off the road. We go up over this sand dune it's about, a quarter mile north of the inlet. And we go into the back part of the park where there used to be this thing called Party Island. And we see this boat and we see smoke coming off of it and flames and all. And it's getting pulled in on an incoming tide. So it's getting sucked back in towards the bay.
Yeah.
So, and we don't see anyone else responding.
No Coast Guard. Nothing.
No, nothing. So we're like, okay, let's go. Yeah, so we grab our stuff. We chase that boat 45, 50 minutes. You know, we had to run through the thicket, swim across these little channels, get up and run. We got all the way back to the west side of Sedges. You can't get any further west. And just jump in the water and start swimming out to this boat. And we were probably about 50 yards away from the boat. And who do you think pulls
the
up?
Coast Guard.
Finally. Marine police.
Yeah.
They plucked the guys off the boat. And
I would have been like, screw them. Go get me.
So that's the prep of the story.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So we swim in. We're laughing and joking. Oh, you know, we wish we got out to the boat. And so we have to now come back. And by this time, it's dark. We left the lights on the truck so we could find our way back. So we're about, I guess, two-thirds of the way back. And I see another truck come up over the dunes, park police. It was his first night on duty. He'd never been in the park before or whatever. And he thinks he's helping us out by turning off the lights in the truck. So, we couldn't find the truck. So it took us, I don't know, it took us quite some time.
Right. Oh, and the mosquitoes are bad back there.
Listen,
you guys, the mosquitoes are so bad back there.
So we get back to the truck and we're laughing about it, joking. We go off the 23 chute, which is right by the end of the road. And as we're going off, we see a Durango in the middle of the chute, buried to the axles, and this woman standing outside of it. So trying to shorten the story, one of the guys gets out of the truck and starts talking to her. She speaks broken English. He gets out of her that she was going on the beach to pick up her boyfriend who went kayaking. So we thought that he went over the A-15 path with his kayak, and he was too lazy to carry it back over. So as we start driving that way, she's screaming, no. He gets out of her that he went in on the bayside, which is our kayak area, and decides he's going to
go out
through the inlet and come in on the ocean.
Right. To meet her with her car.
In 6-8 foot surf.
Wow.
And if you know the inlets of the boaters, when it's 6-8 foot on the beach, it's like 10-12 easy. In the mouth of the inlet.
Right. Oh, and this it's dark already.
Funneled into it.
It's pitch. Yeah. Because the waves break in all different directions. So it's pitch black. We go flying down to the inlet and we start asking all the fishermen. And we come across this one guy who's sitting in a lawn chair with a big can of Foster's. And he's just sitting there. We go, you see this guy? He's like, yeah. He goes, we yelled to him, don't go out. We were trying to get him. And he yelled back, fuck you.
And he just kept on going.
So he goes, what do you think I did? I went back to my truck. I got my beer. He said, because I knew it was going to get good.
Yeah, yeah. Just had to sit there, watch.
Just sit back and watch the show.
Right. So we, two of us ran as far out, you know, and it's precarious. It's when I say run, it took us a long time to get as far as you can out on the rocks. And then it drops out, drops below the surface and comes up by the light stanchion.
Right. There's and, it's a submerged jetty, submerged jetty.
And there was a pole that was, I guess one of the storms had lodged into the jetty. And we were holding on to that because the waves are crashing so on. So the guy I was with saw the kayak floating, I guess about halfway across the inlet in the shadow of the lights. So I jump off the rocks. I start swimming out. And then I realize this isn't the best decision because there are boats coming in.
Right. And they can't,
and they can't see you. So I'm like, so anyway, I get the guy. He's unconscious.
He was floating in the water.
What saved this guy's life?
Yeah, life
had nothing to do with me.
No, right.
He didn't have a life jacket on. It was a sit-in kayak. It wasn't even an ocean-going kayak. When he got out, he apparently got broached, lost his paddle, was thrashing about, managed to get somehow back to the kayak, and he put his hand through the carry loop of the and went out.
It was just, he was unconscious and he was
floating face down, getting dragged back in the inlet with the kayak, and it was an incoming tide. So that's the only thing that saved this guy's
life. Wow.
So the guy I was with yells back that he,
that's all pitch dark now,
pitch black. You can't see.
Wow.
Jack. So, the guy I'm with makes his way back. He yells, we got him. We got him. I swim him all the way in. So it's easier to get him across the rocks. But the best part of this story is the guy that was talking with the woman is in the truck. And when she heard that we found him, she jumps out of the truck and starts to run. And he grabs her. He's like trying to calm her down. Don't go, don't go. And she starts flipping out. He dead, he dead. I see the movie when they say that he's dead.
Wow.
So I think that was probably the most, you know, like I say, you got to be prepared.
That's an unbelievable story. That's
a lot of stages to that.
That's like,
you know, you're
like in the best part of this story. And I'm like,
when he was like, that was just the introduction.
I was like, you've already hit two climaxes of this story.
Oh my God. But everyone has those stories.
Yeah, that's a good one. I remember, you know, believe it or not, I remember you telling me that story because I used to go down to State Park and like see Chip like once a year towards the end. I used to go to all the beaches, like see everybody. I was like the you know, the Yenta going around.
Yeah. What are you? The mayor of all?
Yeah. Well, you know, patrols? We had the time to do that.
Everyone's payroll.
But but I remember
I'm a ringer at this beach. I worked at the beach.
I kind of remember that story. That's a great story.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, you know, you know, just people who are on the podcast or other people, you can't understand, you know, that area, that jetty, the power, the water coming in, it's rushing in probably, you know, five, six knots.
The scariest thing about that wasn't just the water. It was the fishing boats and the boats coming in.
And plus
in.
You get in the rocks.
They can't see them.
And the rocks. But, you know, you get pushed onto a rock, hit your head, you're done.
Yes, sir.
I mean, that ain't no.
So I was told by Victoria Alvarez to ask you about the hammer story. But first, I think we should address some of these comments because this seems like a lot of your guys and girls hopping in the chat. Brandon McMahon,
he's a rookie with
says
us.
Says hi, Cap. Tyler Sococcio says the fable burning boat rescue.
Yeah.
Olivia Elm says, Ayo, hi, Tyler. Or Ayo, Tyler. Not talking about me, but hi. And Gabby Romano hopped in as well. These are all your guards. Yeah, that's awesome. Showing the love. Thank you, Island D.
You know,
I want to hear the hammer story.
All right, then we're gonna we did an hour and 17 minutes, just so you know. Go quick, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
So you could say
two things real fast. One is it depends on who you talk to who lays claim to that, because recently I was told somebody else is laying claim to my story.
That's not a cool story.
Boy.
Do not steal the captain's story.
Well, he happens to be a good friend of mine, so has to do with some surfers and their failure to cooperate.
We'll leave it at that.
We had to. I had to straighten them out. Yeah, that, for the record, it's my story. It was on Trenton Avenue. level.
Okay.
It.
Okay.
Hey, one other thing, Chip. How many lifeguards you guys, you know, right, average
so,
now?
We're in the neighborhood of 80 guards. We have 80 guards. We typically have on staff 4 EMTs, non-COVID years. Last couple of years, we were a little short because of COVID.
Wow, that's a big crew. It's a good crew.
We start at 9:30. We have a morning meeting, and we go up to the beach. We open up at 10. They're opening up by 10. Then we run training breaks. 10:30, we start half-hour training breaks. So we don't meet. That's one of the differences, I guess. We don't meet as a beach patrol and do a beach patrol workout in the mornings. We have our
morning. Split out and everybody. Yeah,
right. And then we're developed into squads, or we're broken up into squads. So each guard is assigned to a squad. They're usually about 12 or 14 guards
to a squad.
With a sergeant. And they cover different areas. We rotate too. So each squad will sit a section of the beach for a week. So by the end of the summer, they've all seen the entire beach a couple of times.
And how many officers, like lieutenants, have a squad? Yeah,
So we have, 4, sergeants who are assigned a squad. We have 2, relief sergeants, cover days off,
right.
2 lieutenants, a north and a south, and myself.
Because I remember when I was there, you had the main beach, you had a north and a south tower, and then now you have the other tower, which is right. In Tysha Shoal. So you don't have, that's not a separate entity or south.
There's no physical tower there, okay. Like on the north and south. It's just
it's an extension entity. Of the south beach
right.
then.
Right.
So everything's run out of the south beach. So you, right. you know, okay.
Yeah. And then, we'll sit, they get a half hour lunch breaks. So we have 3 training breaks, 10:30, 11, and so on. Those are organized training breaks. So they'll meet at a stand and they'll either do an assigned workout or an assigned skill, neck and back or something like that. And then in the afternoon, once lunch breaks are over and we get into our afternoon training break, that's more, break of their own choice. Most of the time, every so often we'll give them something to do, but they're allowed to swim, run, row, whatever. But they have to train.
And then what time you guys pack it in?
We pack it in at 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
6 p.m.
So I got one other thing. And I don't want to, this is not a criticism, but on our beach, you know, we have to try to control the booze, you know. And I know State Park has always been like a zero tolerance, supposedly. Right. But now I hear they're at the concession, yeah. they serve alcohol.
Yeah, there's a the Red Fox Grill. And a concession, you know, as part of their contract a few years ago, they allowed them to sell. And to be honest, from a water safety standpoint, in the beginning, I was 100% against it. But they proved me wrong. The management runs a really
tight ship
operation. It's good. They're cooperative. So it's been actually pretty good. After work, we've actually gone
down and have a couple
of foods. Good.
Yeah. Good.
Really
yeah.
good food.
We, that's one of our biggest problems, you know, in Seaside. I mean, we have this bunch of bars on the board. I mean, it's so easy, but right. now, but you got that too. So
we have that, and we haven't had issues with that. Like I said, that's been phenomenal. It's really the people bringing in their coolers and because it's an island beach, you can bring your cooler out on the beach. You can bring,
yeah. It's not like people are going to the Red Fox to party all day.
Right.
yeah. What were we going to say, Tyler?
One, Mark McDermott wants us to ask you about the wave where you saw the bay. And they're all saying they want me to ask you about the wave where you saw the
that
bay,
was so. When I was in I think that was Hurricane Gloria. I was in Lavalette working, and Joe Casino and I decided to go for a swim. Not our best
naturally.
Well, he's a hell of a swimmer.
Listen,
fared a little better than
we all got sucked in and going out with Joe. It's Joe.
Honest question.
For the record, Mark, I keep correcting you. It was not the bay. It was the church steeple at the end of Philadelphia Avenue.
Not quite the bay.
Not quite.
So I have a follow-up question for that and one more question for you.
And start rowing, Mark.
Yeah, work on that stroke.
Yeah.
How important do you think it is as an ocean rescue lifeguard to put yourself in those hurricane surf situations?
That's a good question. I'm older and wiser now, I think. I think it's important. A quick story. My wife came home. She was working out. She was at the gym, and she said she took kickboxing one day, and she was all excited.
My mom does that. She loves it.
So I, in the conversation with her, I was like, how many times did you get hit? And she's like, what are you talking about? I said, well, you said you did kickboxing. How many times did you get hit? And she said, no, there was no, none of that. And I said, then you didn't do kickboxing. You did aerobics, right? So
aerobics.
The
with
analogy
extra steps.
Is if you're not used to getting hit in the face, yeah, or you're not used to getting the, you know, ragdolled in heavy surf, you know, it's an eye-opening experience. Yeah. So I think it's important that they train. I think it's important that guys go out and in surf conditions. But from a management and being older and wiser, I think we just need to be a little bit more cautious on how we do that.
You got
to
be really, so it's because it's right. Like, and also from like a kind of public view, like we're shutting down the water, but then you see 10 lifeguards right. out in right. 10 foot surf. Like, yeah. What's going on?
Right.
Like,
well, then, we're training. Them, always, we're training.
We know that.
That was always one of my favorite things when it was a red flag day right. and we're like walking out of the water with like fins on, just like playing around, right. having a good time. It's like big surf.
Right.
And everyone's kind of like watching us and like, don't.
Right.
Don't
go but ahead. That's, again, it goes back to, you need to be prepared. The first time you're a hell, you know, you're in a hold down for mm-hmm. some time. I mean,
it changes you.
So
I remember.
You become wiser.
Yeah, I've been there. I don't like being there.
I specifically remember the first time I was out, like as a rookie, with a red can and fins, and I saw like an 8 foot wave, right. and I'm like right in the impact zone, and I was just like, right. oof! And that thing took me.
Right, I was out like with that was glory. I was out with Joe, and that was a wake up call for me, because we just jumped in the water and swam, and you know now. It's a little more methodical, looking for the seams, mm-hmm. you know, the rib,
find the rib,
those kinds of
things. So it's like humbling too. It's important, like you said, to get your ass beat by the ocean. Right. So, you know, yeah, like right. maybe that right. dude in his cargo shorts and guinea teeth, maybe I shouldn't let him go out in that surf right, because right. I know how it feels like right. to not.
You got to get out there in La Valette. And there's two different oceans, and I don't want to keep on going with this, but you know, there's the Northeasters that we used to go in all the time. And I remember when we were in La Valette in the Northeast, because we would work out every day. So in the Northeast, it was so sloppy. We would take our fins, goggles, and run up north to the North Beach, right. all the way north, and go out and swim all the way down. And it was actually fun. And yeah. we would go all the way down. And we do that all the time. And we didn't think twice about it. Right. I mean, I used to be like, come on, why don't we just like, this is a pain in the ass. It was almost like, I remember days sitting out there swimming. I'm out like half of my, whatever, how far you are. I'm like, what am I doing this? Am I really getting anything out of this? But then you have the hurricane surf, which is a whole different animal. And that's why I try to get mm-hmm. everybody out there, because, and I tell them, get out there and get past the break and just feel the power. And the other thing, you make a good point, Chip, and everybody, I like getting lifeguards out there, because then you set up for the day and you know how bad it is. Because there's sometimes there's 2 foot swells and you're like, oh, you know, but it's a hurricane swell. Right. And you're like, oh, it's no big deal. And you get out there and you're like, holy shit.
One of the most important
swim under the waves.
I know. Yeah, it's just so deep.
Yeah,
and go as deep as you can, grab
the washing machine goes like 10 feet
and
down.
I feel like I've swum out in a hurricane and I've just been like, the white water just never. Yeah. So I'm just in white water
the fact that you can't get a rhythm.
Yeah.
You have mm-hmm. to get used to that, because it sets in fast.
You got to use your head with Big Ocean. And we could talk about a whole show of how to navigate getting out in a hurricane surf, because you need to go out on a run. I mean, I've taken jet skis out. I've taken boards out. You could get out, and even boats.
Well,
but,
and that's the thing. Like,
and even Northeasters, like, it's technique.
Once you get to the point where you can read the water, you realize like,
yes,
even though that surf is scary, there is a way to get out there safely.
Yeah. Yeah,
pretty
yeah.
much every time.
Yeah. Well, if we have done it.
A couple of factors go along with that. One is being able to read the water.
Yeah.
And two is being in condition.
Yes.
And I think that's what a lot of the public, because all the time when we're shutting down water, I've been swimming. Yeah. Well, yes, you have. But, you know, how conditioned
are you? You've been swimming once a week for maybe 10 years in this water.
Well, I always enjoyed the first like red flag day workout, because you could tell all of the senior guards when we're all lined up in front of a sandbar. And then Cap blows the whistle, and all the younger guards go straight, and all the senior guards are all running up the beach.
I remember
a little bit jumping into the water and then
using the current,
going right out.
You bring that up, Adam. I remember we were doing it. It was one of those just eerie, like you show up, it's drizzling, you can see the waves like cresting over the sand dunes, and you're just like, even at like 7 years, I'm just like, oh, I know he's making us get in that water.
This workout is going
to
be brutal.
So we get out there, and I like to like look at the rookies like as we're walking up on a day like that, like, you know, we're going in there, right, dude? And they'll be there.
Yeah.
And you get to see what they're made of. But I remember one time, like you just pointed out, we're all lining up And I'm like looking at the water. I'm like, all right, it's like pretty hard south sweep. I'm going to hop in the water 20, 30 yards south. And I look, and the buoy's dead in front of us. And I look at everybody. I'm like, I'm going in down there. You guys should probably follow me.
Oh, you gave them warning.
They all sprint straight into the water. And I'm not the greatest swimmer. I'm a good swimmer because I've taken my time to learn it. But when I showed up on the beach, I was in the back of the pack in every workout. So I get in the water and I jog down to the waterline. I'm taking my time, stroking it out there. I get there 50 yards before everybody, all the high school swimmers. And I'm like, hey, you guys probably should have listened to me. I'm going to do that again on the next loop. And they all followed me.
You are much kinder than me because I usually let them go first. And then when they're not looking, I go. So I don't give them any tips.
These guys, I make them do the buoys. You know, in fact, somebody a couple years ago, at night, they went out and cut the buoy because they hated that.
He would make us do buoys and I'd be like, I'm going to go grab some sand just to see how deep it is. And I'd follow it, get to the anchor, but, like walking in a little bit.
But the
I've
point,
never done that. That's, but the point that's about, creepy for me.
About the point with
you
people.
Like, you don't like going down there?
No.
You don't like going to the bottom? No. I love it. I love it. I love taking the rookies out.
You get to the layer of seaweed.
I remember once I got to a layer of just blackness. And I was just like, I was talking like so much trash with the younger guards about how they couldn't get to the bottom. I was like, I got to do it. And I like took two more, got to the bottom. Like my eyes, my...
And you got to bring the sand up.
I got to throw it at them.
they'll vouch. Some of those rookies on there, they'll vouch. They have to do it. So.
But the one point you made, though, people, I've always said this to these guys, and I said, generally, the public, they overestimate their ability, and underestimate the power of the ocean.
Right.
And that's a mindset that a lot of people have, like you said. And
it's,
you know,
an easy trap. That's, you know, like I said, when I went out that time with Joe, it was, you know,
it don't look that bad sometimes.
8 years, and I was like, oh, I'm, you know, and yeah. Neptune will wake you up very quickly.
Neptune. I just sent you a video on Instagram a couple of days ago of a lifeguard at
I was trying to pull it up earlier, but I couldn't find it.
Yeah, there was a lifeguard. There's a video that came out last week of a lifeguard at the North Shore just like tearing into two surfers. And like
he was ripping them up.
Why? What was he ripping them up?
They were on like the biggest break on the North Shore, and they are clearly two like novice surfers.
Kooks
with big boards, with just, you know, crappy board shorts, like, and to paddle out on like the biggest breaks on the North Shore, like, you, it's like you have to check in with the guards, mm-hmm. and they have to okay you to paddle out.
Right. You put their lives in jeopardy.
Yeah, and
right.
The video came out, you know, of people criticizing the guard because he was like tearing into them and pointing out how they're not
right.
To be fair, he was using some choice language, you know.
Yeah, but like, you know how many, be you know, so how many, you know how many novice servers an experienced guard at the North Shore has probably dragged ocean.
Right. Of course.
He's probably, that takes an emotional toll on him. That's what was probably coming out.
That goes back to Mike's point about them underestimating the conditions and their abilities. And that's probably the biggest obstacle to what we do personally, is convincing the public on those big days. Like, even when we're not in the water and we have it closed.
They
argue with you, and they, you know,
I used to have friends from college texting me when in the summer on like a red flag.
Why can't we swim?
Yeah, and I'm like, don't overestimate your
I'm like, yeah, I don't, it I sounds like a cliche.
I was forced to go into that this morning, and I swim in the ocean like every single day in the summer. And I want nothing to do with that, dude.
And it sounds like a cliche, but like, it's not a pool,
right?
People really think it is.
That's like the biggest tourist.
There are also issues that come into play, medical issues. I mean, now, you know, in maturity, some of the things that I did when I was younger as a guard, I'm like,
we're getting old, Chip. We can't, I mean, you and I mean, like, you know,
you're
but you know, it's funny you talk about Joe Cassino, because Joe's an animal. We, you know, Joe's like an unbelievable athlete. And I remember we were down in Florida once. I actually went down for, I don't know where we were down there for, a tournament or something. And it was, we went out in this big ocean, and maybe it was canceled. And I remember there was no lifeguards around, but we went out and we were going to ride waves, and it was coral down there. It was like really bad. And I remember I got dumped in, and I hit my arm, and I was like, you know, cut up and everything. I'm like, yeah, you got to be really careful, especially when you go, you know what it is you got to know the beach. Like, we go, you know, we know what Seaside Heights is. We know what State Park is, you know, kind of bottom. When you go down to the Caribbean or somewhere else, you really got to be careful because it's a whole different break. It's a whole different phenomenon there going on. And there is not a lot of people to save you, but you know, you have to really know.
You know, with the younger guys, one of the best things, like Joe was a great teacher, model, whatever for me. And you know, he wasn't on the beach much longer than I think a year longer, but just as we've come through the ranks, what I've learned from watching him and talking with him and talking with other guards is just, you know, that's educational, you know,
situational awareness too, you know, but anyway, listen, it's been, I think we should, you know, we
already, I got one more question.
Okay.
Short question.
Okay.
We call it a lifer on our beach. Catchmar would be a lifer. I'll probably end up being a lifer. Adam pretends he's gonna get out at some point.
I'm a weekend warrior at this point.
When did you realize that this was something you were gonna do for as long as possible?
That's a good question. I think I'd like to say my first day. I think I grew up on the beach, so I was always a beach person. But once I got there, and got to meet the guys and the training, you know, I played sports growing up, so the athleticism piece. I think I knew right from the beginning. Made some career choices as a result of wanting to stay on the beach. So
yeah, now you run one of the biggest, best beach patrols around. So that's pretty, it's pretty impressive. So yeah, we all it's nice too because we all, we all started together. Chip, me, I know Hanshoe, but Joe. Now Jack's the captain there. Right. Rob Connors, who's our captain, I gave him the test. So it's a good community, and I think we all, like you said, we all know each other. We all know when the shit hits the fan that what the other person,
what we're trying to do with this podcast is like strengthen that discourse between. Right.
That's one thing that Chip. This is really good. This is really like bringing a lot of people together. A lot of people were kind of apprehensive of saying stuff, but when you first of all, I like what we're doing here is that we're showing people out there that we're just idiots. This is a serious job. And by the way, I just want to give everybody a shout out. Next week we're going to have John Chip Moore. He's an attorney with USLA. He's going to come on. Yeah, and we were talking a little bit about all this stuff. And, I say, are you a lifeguard or an attorney? what do you put in your card?
I want to point something else out.
But watch that episode next week.
It's Chip, this says a lot about who you are as a leader because we have 21 people watching us right now. And I don't think we've ever had before tonight more than 15 we broke 20 viewers for the first time on our 20th episode
our 20th episode.
I'll say thanks guys and your pay raises are set for next year.
Tuned into this podcast gets a pay raise.
Listen,
everyone who commented,
I think they're gonna want that in writing.
And listen, hey, do us a favor, whoever's watching us, subscribe. We want to get up to 100,000 people. So 100,000 subscribe, hit the bell. Yeah. But listen, Chip, again,
my pleasure.
It's been, I've known you for so many years. Yeah. I think that it's unbelievable what you do. It's a big job over there. And I know I've never heard, anybody, everybody loves that place who works there. I can tell you, I love the air conditioned, rooms, the competition, everything. So listen, you're welcome. Absolutely come back again.
I would love to talk to you about
we got so many things
I would love to pick your brain about what you know about the Coast Guard's role on Island Beach and the U.S. Life Saving Service, because I know that Island Beach played a very important role in that, especially in the beginning. So I would love to get you back on to talk about
still
that.
Still have a tower.
No problem.
Yeah. No problem. So, that's it.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it. And
This is awesome.
We'd love to get you back.
Oh, we got to have you sign the can up there. That's
when you leave.
That,
yeah.
Actually,
okay.
Joe Casino and Ben Smith came up with that idea to have our guests.
We had Joe Jr. here. It was a good show. So listen, everyone, thank you for tuning in. And
Tyler Sococcio says, Sergeant, pay for us all.
Keep dreaming. Well, you have to earn the stripes first.
We're very happy everybody tuned in and watch us next week. Next week's going to be a really informative show. We're going to talk about a lot of different things.
A lot coming up.
Yeah, he's going to fill us in on the USLA position on boat, on clearing the beach. Things that we talked about. We don't have to get into it now, but I think after he comes on, if you want to link in or come back, or just keep the discussion going, because we all need to. I think that's one thing that the show could do is really disseminate, the information, and we could all become better. So anyway, Tyler, you want to take us out? Listen, everyone.
Follow us on lg.association. Shoot us an email at drcatchmar@icloud.com. We should get a lifeguards off-duty email at some point. We'll figure that out.
As the marketing director, I agree.
Pseudo marketing or de facto.
De facto marketing.
Like I said, we have to meet with the board for that. I'm Tyler.
So meet with the board.
That's Adam. That's Dr. Michael.
Wait. We got Adam here. This is Adam.
This is Chip Bruce. This is me.
Chip Bruce.
This is Chip Bruce.
And I am Dr. Michael Cashmore.
Yeah. Are we doing the intro for the outro again?
I don't know how that works. Yeah, we can do it. Listen, but before people give us an email, if you want to contact us, come on the show. Somebody wants to come on. It's drcatchmar@icloud.com.
Yep.
Shoot us a letter. An email. And give us your opinions. We like stories. You know, we'd love to get anybody on here who really wants to come, and we want to get some, you know, hopefully females on here who've been on the beach and have some really good stories. We want to get their perspective. We'd love that.
If you love the ocean and you feel like you've got an interesting story, we'd love to talk to you. You know, you don't even necessarily have to be a lifeguard. Right. You're a surfer.
So we're going to try now this intro to the egg juice. I don't know how it's going to work.
You know, we were here for 2 hours. We could have just made an outro. It's okay.
Show it. Do it.
All right, we're back to say goodbye.
Yeah, listen, don't do it. We're sorry. This is live, so now we're not going to do that.
Thank God we came back for that.
Yeah, what's that? What happened?
He has to do Stay Out, Stay Alive.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. Sorry, we forgot about that. So we have it.
You just got the job.
You know, it's funny. The Navy SEALs, they say stay awake, stay alive, you know. And I think so we have when we close the beach in Seaside at the end, we have a whole thing that we say. These beaches are closing for the day and blah, blah, blah. And then at the end, we say stay out and stay alive. So we'd appreciate if you would, throw that out for us. And that's how we end the show.
Chip Bruce from Island Beach. Stay out, stay alive.
Stay out, stay alive. I love that. All right. Thank you very much.
The views and opinions expressed on Lifeguards Off Duty are those of its hosts and guests exclusively. They do not represent any entity, organization, or municipality.